to realize that SAP is being targeted. You're not protected by the sort of the grandness of your system. That's number one. Two, realize SAP is being targeted primarily with known exploits and context-driven social engineering.
Welcome to SAP Cybersecurity by NoMonkey, where we tackle SAP security together, where we break down the complexities of SAP cybersecurity and make them real, relevant, and actionable. I'm your host, Wasim Ajrab, and every episode we explore the threats, innovations, and strategies shaping the future of cybersecurity. Whether you're in deep technical trenches or leading at the C-level, this is where we talk openly about it and really what it takes to protect the systems that run your business. All right, let's dive in. Manny, first of all, it's great to have you on the show and looking forward to our topic today, where I think this is the first time we're looking into SAP from a completely different perspective. One I like to read about and personally sometimes spend some time, but I think believe where you spend every waking hour doing so. But before we go into that, for our audience as well, who might not know you, who is Manny, your journey in the dark web intelligence and how you ended up to some extent doing research around SAP environments. Manny, over to you. Thank you.
Yeah, Wasim, nice to see you here. I appreciate you having me here on the call. Yeah, I currently work as head of research at Lab One. Lab One is a small sort of cybersecurity firm that services a specific niche of the dark web market. But prior to this, I was working as the lead analyst and manager at Accenture's dark web reconnaissance team, which I did for close to 8 years, almost 9 years. So I've spent the better part of 10 years working in sort of dark web cyber threat intelligence, different fields within this, different specialties. And of course, across this sort of journey, a lot of times you have either a direct sort of relationship with something that's going on with SAP or some sort of adjacent relationship. So that's kind of how my interest in sort of the specific part of SAP being weaponized by dark web criminals began forming, which of course is one of the areas that I've been looking at over the last couple of years.
Interesting. Now, you spent years doing this, like looking at emerging threats within the dark web, and of course, briefing, I've seen that you've done a lot of different talks. What drew you to the threat intelligence and maybe the dark web reconnaissance when it comes to that in general?
I mean, I stumbled into it. It was not, I don't think anyone, very few people, I should say, set out to do it because it's not really a normal career path you know exists, you know, when you're in university or whatever your background is. I stumbled into it. I was studying war studies at King's College. I had an amazing professor there who at the time was both working as a professor at King's College, but also working within a CTI firm called iDefense. He recruited me. I joined iDefense. I landed on the dark web reconnaissance team, and I've loved it ever since.
Amazing. I think it's a under-evaluated or undervalued area of cybersecurity, I would say. And this is for the audience. I mean, most of our audience do come from the SAP world. Some are really cybersecurity. Your research often identifies, and this is a section I'd like to dig deeper into later on, but in general, your research really identifies those trends before they become mainstream. So before we hear them. What makes the dark web such a valuable source of intelligence when it comes to defenders? Like from a defender perspective, what makes it a very valuable source of intelligence?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I feel like I've done my job the best if I know about a threat or an emerging topology before other people, right? That's what I'm hired to do, essentially. Yeah. And luckily, we've been able to do that quite a few times, which is a good thing. I would say what makes dark web valuable is, you know, there's two key things to it. The dark web ecosystem is obviously extremely commercialized now, right? It used to be that in order for you to do an attack back in the days, just let's say 6-7 years ago, you had to be able to do the entire cyber kill chain in-house.
Yes.
That's a difficult thing to do. Obviously, there are still major groups who can pull this off, and obviously the APT groups. But for the majority of cyber criminals, that's a difficult thing to do. What the cybercrime, or what the dark web sort of enables, is that you can outsource this kill chain. That makes it easier for criminals, but it also gives us as researchers different steps that we can understand and analyze. And in that regards, the dark web is unique in its sense that from a threat intel perspective, you can get intel before an attack happens, right? In the planning, in the trend, in the emerging phase. And of course, after an attack has already happened, when somebody is trying to sell some data, sell some access, whatever it may be. And that's where it has value for enterprise.
Absolutely. I definitely see that. I mean, with SAP and now our at least topic from that. So a lot of people, when it comes to SAP, going deeper into that, think that SAP is just this application, a single application. It is called an application, but at the end of the day, the entire ecosystem. But I think attackers seem to think very differently. And as you've done this research around SAP, if you are, or has SAP become more vulnerable, more interesting, or have attackers become better at actually recognizing that SAP systems can really provide a huge value to whatever motive they have from the dark web perspective? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think necessarily SAP has become more vulnerable, but the interest in SAP has gone up significantly, right? The reputation on the dark web regarding SAP is that SAP is an open sieve, right? Yeah. There are so many integrators, so many software, so many implementations, so many vulnerabilities that SAP is viewed as an extremely vulnerable open system, but it's always been viewed that way. I think the difference we've seen is that we used to just see ransomware. Right now, we see ransomware with data exfiltration or data exfiltration on its own. And for the latter two, SAP has become extremely attractive to target. Now, this has been largely driven by, you know, shiny hunters and similar groups doing a ton of attacks against Salesforce. And it goes to show how much data you can take from Salesforce. And then people realize, well, SAP is the same, just bigger. So why don't we do that, right? And we've seen a huge influx of threat actors that are trying specifically to target SAP, trying to get to the data that's stored in SAP because of the centrality that SAP has in, you know, global enterprise management, right? And in that regard, you could argue SAP has become more vulnerable, not because the platform itself has become buggy, but rather because the interest in targeting it has gone up from threat actors with dedicated resources and skills to do so.
Do you think it makes it right now, like this, I had some guests over the last few episodes and they were within the SAP world or what I like to call it, Japanese world for years and years and years, right? And they see a difference from compromising your traditional domains, your traditional environment. From your perspective, coming out of, not from within or within SAP, but from that perspective, do you think it is any different than compromising a traditional cloud environment or a traditional Windows domain environment?
No, it's just more available, right? I mean, I think security related to SAP has been overlooked for a while. Right. I mean, there are specific companies, obviously, that deals with SAP security. But the conversations I've heard around security, like around SAP, let's say 3-4 years ago, security was very much an afterthought.
Yeah.
And this means that very old school techniques, reuse credentials, social engineering credentials, infrastealer credentials, leaked passwords, that kind of stuff really works well against SAP still.
Absolutely.
And it yields a massive upside from the criminal.
Absolutely. I mean, there are still within these guests, they were talking about finding 20 years ago and within Nomaki, when we are doing some sort of pen testing, we're still finding those similar ones, whether it is default credentials or open services, which is insane to have it. There's still, I think there's there's still that maturity of awareness of what SAP systems can do. It is still missing on the greater part of organizations who are using SAP. Now, I want to, you mentioned something around threat actors. Do you see any kind of specialization towards SAP or in general ERP systems when it comes to data theft or extortion or resale? What do you see from that perspective?
Yeah, we're seeing that now. We're seeing threat actors that have specific knowledge and specific skills specifically around targeting SAP and other ERP systems. A couple of different ones, right? We've seen threat actors that have either worked with SAP in their professional career or has now specialized in targeting so much that they are offering that as a service. And what I mean by that is you know, it's no longer so easy to just get a set of credentials, log in, and be on with it, right? That is really, that only works if the company is completely negligent, right? But then what we're seeing is obviously there's a lot of MFA protection and so on. And now that there's a criminals out there who really understands how does humans and SAP interact? How does businesses integrate SAP? And having that knowledge, that inside knowledge, helps them be able to social engineer access into SAP systems. So we see that as a service on the dark web. We see threat actors that understand, okay, well, where is the valuable data or where is the valuable system stored with SAP? I can guide you to that so you don't have to exfiltrate, you know, a terabyte of data. You can just get the 5 gigabytes that really matter. We see threat actors that are specialized in gaining initial access specifically around SAP, right? I mean, last August, we saw a huge campaign with different kind of threat actors that only used CVE 2025-31-34, the NetWeaver one, as a way to get access and resell that. So there is a set of threat actors now on the dark web that are SAP native, that understands how that works. Some of those will also have skills when it comes to, for example, some of the Oracle suite or the Salesforce suites, but some of them are specific only to SAP.
Interesting. So
the main one interesting thing we've seen here, I think I showed you this in the presentation earlier, was a threat actor that has a data indexing service. He helps ransomware understand the data they steal. And he has specifically built a machine learning module designed to work with data taken from SAP system, how that data is stored within SAP.
Wow. Okay.
And that goes to show the effort and money being put into understanding and targeting SAP.
I mean, it's a topic right after where we look into how has AI definitely improved this for different threat actors. So from that aspect of now really cyber or threat actors that are specifically targeting this part of the environment within organizations, for organizations' perspective, what do you believe or what do you think is a misconception when it comes to cybercrime or organized cybercrime within this ecosystem? Anything from that perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of misconceptions across the board, right? One is I'm not at risk. A lot of organizations think they're not at risk because they may not be, you know, $1 billion organization, or even if they are $1 billion organization and they've invested a ton of money in cybersecurity, they think they're not at risk. Everyone's at risk. We see it all the time. If it's not direct, it's through your supply chain. The second thing is thinking that having MFA, having, you know, some sort of firewall, having a little bit of threat intel is enough to protect you. It just isn't. Right? I mean, you need to be constantly on your team. And of course, the problem is that SAP is so vast. It's so different, differently integrated, so many implementations of it, so many different kind of systems that are either public exposed or not public exposed, that it becomes extremely difficult to understand what is your risk profile in SAP, right? And that is a misconception. I think another huge misconception is that the only cyber criminals who pose a risk to you are APTs, China, Russia. That's not the case, right? The majority of cybercrime is made up by ordinary, low-skilled, medium-skilled dark web criminals who get lucky and weaponize it, right? And then finally, the final misconception, I don't love how much focus there is on AI. I think there are real implementations of criminals using AI. I think there's real threats. I also think there's a ton of hype, right?
Yes.
Everyone loves talking about Mythos. Mythos has never been used by a criminal group. And I think we do ourselves an injustice by focusing on the theoretical AI threats rather than the real AI threats.
I completely agree with that. I mean, we do see also when it comes to the utilization of AI, I think there's a lot to do with being a domain expert and improving on that specific whatever you are developing, exploitation or either from a defensive perspective. But from that perspective, do you see a careless attacks going on or that significant shift from an adversary perspective when you are using LLM or you're using AI to conduct any kind of attacks? Do you see any kind of lack? Do you see any kind of shifts that are happening from that area?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's favorite thing to say when it comes to AI, right? It's the same three things everyone says all the time, right? It lowers the barriers to entry. It increases applications, and it increased scale and speed, right? Theoretically, all of that is true. I think we have yet to see this adopted en masse. There are areas where we see it, right? Like, for example, we don't see any poorly written Nigerian prince emails anymore, right? Because they can very easily be done with an LLM, right? But we also don't see mass adoption of entirely AI-driven attack chains. We had an example right recently with Jade Puffer, but that is the you know, exception to the rule rather than the rule. I think what we are seeing, for example, is threat actors being able to find exploits from patches much quicker, reverse engineering of patches, right? So we have actually seen that the window in which a organization can patch has gone down quite significantly. And that is a real thing that really truly matters, right? You can't, if your window of patching is currently anything more than 2 days, you're so far behind, it doesn't even matter. You might as well just leave your patches unpatched, right?
Unpatched, exactly, yeah.
So we have seen that does matter. We've also seen, for example, that threat actors are stealing data and then putting it in through LLMs, different kind of AI models, and understanding what they take. And that helps guide a ransomware group to find the different data that they steal, for example, from an SAP system, and figure out what matters, what doesn't matter, what's leveraged, what's not leveraged, how can I use this in the supply chain, and so on and so forth. So there are true weaponizations and usage of AI. It's just not... it's not the mythos finding a zero-day exploit in a vulnerable system, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what, based on what you see from that perspective, like in terms of the dark web, what kind of developments, let's say, over the next few years that might concern you or concerns you the most when it comes to these areas?
Yeah, I mean, good point. I mean, I think I first started talking about deepfakes back in 2017 was the first piece we did on it. We presented it at Black Hat in 2021. That's only going to get worse, right? It was difficult to do a deepfake because you needed a lot of data and you needed high quality data. Now you don't need a lot of data and you don't need high quality data. So more people in an organization can be deepfaked. And if you can suddenly deepfake a sysadmin who is maybe not as protected and as high profile as the CEO, mm-hmm. you've got an easy access into an organization. We also see, obviously, the supply chain implications of a data breach from an organization are now higher than they've ever been, because threat actors can find the pieces of nugget within a trove of stolen data that they previously couldn't find, right? If you stole 1 terabyte of data 2 years ago, you had to be extremely lucky to find the 2, 3, 4 files that matters. Now you can just run it through different kind of AI models, either uncensored ones, jailbroken versions of censored ones, or self-built ones, and then you can use that to target the supply chain of that company, right? And of course, theoretically, looking ahead, we could get into a scenario in which the patching cycles has to be less than an hour to be relevant. And of course, vulnerabilities could be discovered from a zero-day perspective, but we're still far out from that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, I mean, up to this point, we're still talking about patching for everything. It is one of the biggest, I think, still biggest issues for the last X amount of years that I've been in this industry, or coming from the cybersecurity also perspective. I think we've always have had a problem with patching. A lot of organizations have. I want to shift a little bit towards one of your recent or your focus that you're currently looking into, which is quite interesting, I think, to a lot of organizations that have SAP as this kind of core functionality, core environment within those crown jewels, as they are called within an organization. So one area you've researched extensively is, for example, how stolen enterprise data can be weaponized. And for a long after like the actual breach happened, it can then be used for a long time. Can you explain what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So it used to be that enterprise data was stolen in big bulks, right? 200, 300, 400 gigabytes or more. And the entire value of that data set from a criminal perspective was the leverage of it. And if a criminal group didn't get a ransom payment, they would then leak it. And that would kind of be the end of that leak, right? Because nobody or very few people could download 400 gigabytes of unstructured data and understand it to any degree where it would carry on malicious value. Now we've seen that that's changing. Threat actors are spending the time and resources it takes to understand the data that's been taken, either by themselves or by some other ransomware group who's leaked it for free. Many of these does this indexation analysis via machine learning, AI. Some people do it via dedicated analyst on the team.
Mm-hmm.
some groups like FulcrumSec or Anubis does it almost like an investigative journalist report. And some groups use a combination of this with a little bit of LLM help and so on and so forth. And what that means, when a threat actor steals data from a crown jewel system like SAP and then takes the time to analyze it, means that all the skeletons in the closet will be found. And that means higher pressure during the victim during a negotiation. Right, you can, if you find the data that truly matters, either this in the intellectual IP that matters, or the sort of creative accounting that can lead to a fine, or the proof of lack of cybersecurity, stuff like this, where you can now suddenly get into the criminal negligence or the fine territory, they obviously have a higher impact. The second thing is, we've seen that groups are increasingly pivoting. So they're using data taken from breach one to target company two, company three, company four. And that happens in two different ways. There's the hard data, which is the credentials, tokens, keys, right? Finding that kind of data can directly enable a secondary targeting. We've seen shiny hunters do this multiple times now. The other part of that is the soft data, right? All the things that is not credentials, soft, or not credentials, keys, tokens, and so on and so forth. And for example, we had a case recently where a UK company was breached.
Okay.
The threat actors then found a couple of invoices and a couple of documents from that company to some of their clients, weaponized those documents to target those clients. And now you have a downstream attack against two clients coming from the original mother company, right?
Wow.
And this means that there's just a much higher risk overall from these supply chain breaches, right? You're no longer protected by the fact that the data is difficult to get or difficult to understand. People will take time to analyze it. And obviously, you need to protect yourself against that.
I mean, it is an interesting perspective. So for me to think about it, like, here are organizations actually ending that incident response too early? And assuming that the danger is done after the system has been restored?
Yeah, many people are. Many people are ending it too early. And I think some of it is not because they don't realize there's a threat. It's just because traditionally there's been nothing you can do about it, right?
Yeah.
Because if your third party has 1 terabyte of unstructured data lying on the dark web, it's not your data. And you could be breaking the law if you just download that data, right? And the first thing that will then happen is that these companies will go to their Intel provider and be like, hey, can you tell me what my exposure is here? And most companies can't do that, right? That's a difficult thing to do from a technical perspective and from a legal perspective to do, which is what obviously we're kind of working on it in Lab One. That is our moat. That's what we're doing. That's why it's an interesting field for me to be in. But it's just a difficult thing. And I think many companies realize that there is potentially a threat out there. But it becomes, the level of effort for you to uncover it becomes so high that it's not worth it. And you just have You have to hope that the level of effort for a criminal to weaponize it has also so high that it's not going to happen. And that's kind of what's changing now. The math is changing.
So what would you maybe recommend shortly on what might be possible activities after a breach that should be included, or after an incident response process, what should be included as initial steps for an organization to take from that perspective?
It depends a little bit. If you're the one who had the data breach, it's your data that's been taken, you need to understand what was taken. You need to understand, how am I at risk of secondary attacks? Is there an invoice out there that drives up the risk of, for example, a business email compromise attack?
Uh-huh.
Is there a recent pen test report that shows what vulnerable systems we have to what exploit, right? So if it's your own data, you really need to understand what was taken, who does it affect, and then it's really important that you then actively communicate that to your supply chain. If it's not your data, but you're in the supply chain of somebody who had a nasty data breach, you really need to understand, am I exposed, right? Do I have contract data that can expose some sort of, you know, partnership? Do I have integration data that can expose keys, tokens, sessions, whatever? Do I have invoices and material data that can drive up the risk of a CEO attack or a business email compromise attack, right? To some degree, it's not your responsibility because it's your third party, and ideally a responsible third party should tell you about it. But it's a difficult thing to do. It's a costly thing to do. So you need to be vigilant that there is an elevated risk to you as an organization from a third party data breach. And whether or not that is rotate keys, rotate tokens, or whether or not that is, let's actually change our banking details so that we know that we're not going to make a involuntary transfer or something, right? Like it depends a bit on what the relationship is between you and the third party.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, with SAP environments, you said it, supply chain attacks are increasing. I mean, to some extent, there are organizations who would still think that SAP is somehow within their environment. It's quite isolated, but that kind of supply chain or what kind of integrations interfaces are connected makes it quite, I wouldn't say scary, but quite risky for organizations, and scary when you have similar to the last couple of, I forgot when was the last breach, which happened recently, and that company lost a lot of money due to certain facts of, I mean, there was a lot more going on, but at least from that perspective. So with that being said, and of course, this is quite important where incident response plans are now extended to that second wave or second attack, what can possibly go wrong? From that threat intelligence point of view, how can it become a practical part from your perspective, from your opinion of SAP security instead of simply adding it? Because you said it perfectly in the beginning. You said, you know, that part is now becoming more commercialized. We have these dashboards, we have all of this. How can it become a practical part of SAP security rather than just a simply another dashboard on an operations center?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think the best CTI is the stuff that works directly with either your SOC preemptively or work directly with your incident response, right? So traditionally, I think incident response is very siloed from CTI. And it shouldn't be like that, right? Good incident response should have the threat intel that matters. But here, the responsibility is also on the threat intel people. God knows that there is so much shitty CTI out there that just tells you emerging threat or you know, somebody will give you a report showing you the last month ransomware attack. And I hate those because they have zero predictive value to tell you what next month ransomware is going to be. So the responsibility is incident response should reach out to CTI. They have value to add, but CTI should then also own up to that responsibility and not give every single useless IOC or useless report. If somebody got breached with an SAP system from, let's say, I'm just saying something random here, the Killin ransomware group, right? A good CTI should then focus on a month old IOCs from Killin at max and a little bit of background about what have we seen in terms of Killin's behavior after a breach. Do they honor an agreement? Do they leak data? How much data do they on average take? Are they known to pass that data on to someone else who then weaponizes it, right? So more collaboration between CTI and incident response. And for the love of everything holy, cut CTI down to something that actually matters and is not just an overflowing dashboard with a report that nobody cares about.
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, I've seen dashboards like this where we try to make something out of it in terms of a use case, and it is sometimes data that is unusable, crap, to put it in a nice way. So,
In my opinion, right, you almost need to split CTI into two disciplines, right? There's strategic CTI, which most of the time is the useless shit. That's valuable for a C-suite who may want to understand a bit of threatscape, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's the tactical, actionable CTI. Yeah. It's a much lesser part of the market, but that's the stuff that matters. And that's the stuff that should go to your IR, your SOC, so on.
I mean, these are definitely areas where now I do see a lot happening also in the SAP space. As you said, it's becoming somehow attractive. It's becoming somehow, it's always been important, but now it has this special thing around it. We've seen it in the last 2 years.
SAP has always been an attractive target, but criminals are just realizing it now. And that's why the threat is amplifying.
Exactly.
Right.
I cannot agree more with you. I cannot disagree. I don't know. But I do agree with you completely. So to maybe wind down a little bit, if you were advising a CISO that is responsible for a part of his responsibility is protecting those SAP environments, what would be at the top of your priority list?
Okay. Number one, realize SAP is high risk at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Nobody gets fired. Nobody loses their job if China weaponizes some sort of extreme zero-day exploit against you. When you get into trouble, where you get fines, where you get fired is if a very low-skilled threat actor weaponizes something you should have patched a month ago, right? So realize that SAP is being targeted. You're not protected by the sort of the grandness of your system. That's number one. Two, realize SAP is being targeted primarily with known exploits and context-driven social engineering. Now, these two are the two major threat types we're currently seeing that leads to attacks. And both of them are extremely manageable, right? Known exploits, you manage by patching rapidly, quickly, and efficiently against all of your systems. Obviously, with that also need that you need to understand what your exposure is publicly and sort of behind firewalls. The second thing is context-driven social engineering. Realize that threat actors are primarily hacking into your organizations via your employees. They speak local language, German, Dutch, Italian, Spanish, English, right? They speak that local language fluently. And in some instances, they also understand how humans and SAP interact. So have training, have awareness, do drills around these context-driven social engineering exploits with local language. If you do those two things, you're 80% of the way. Outside of that, right, better implementation and demand more from your supply chain. Make your supply chain as secure and accessible as you are, and you know, you're 90-95% of the way.
I think
you can't hedge against every single thing.
No.
You know, if some state actor somewhere wants to drive some high-powered zero-day exploit against you, that's going to happen. I'm certain that at some point in the future, CLUB is going to come out with some sort of zero-day exploit against SAP. But those are not the type of threats you can preemptively work against, right? Focus on the ones you can.
I mean, with those two specific priorities you just listed, I think organizations who take that initiative are, as you said, on a maturity level, on a proactive maturity level than their peers, than industry peers or so on. I'd like to leave it at that because I think there's a lot more that we can discuss with the topic, with how can also intelligence bring a lot of value? How can we bring security teams going into the different teams? But I think I'm going to take you up on another podcast later on to really dig deeper into this. So Manny, thank you very much. Thank you for joining me. Any last words to our audience before we shut this down?
No, I appreciate you being here. I think you're doing a lot of really good for the SAP sort of security space. Raising awareness is the first thing we have to do. So I appreciate you having me here and I'd love to talk to you again. I appreciate you having me here. I think you're doing a lot of good simply by raising awareness, and I'd love to come back another time and talk more with you.
Thank you very much, Manny, and I hope we will see you definitely again. Other than that, thank you very much.